Swing, a subgenre of jazz music that took the world by storm in the 1930s. Regardless of how you personally feel about it now, it was the dominant style of music from 1935 to 1946. With its upbeat tempo and jocular dancing style, swing music brought welcome relief from the worries of World War II. I spoke with musician Peter Bailey about swing music and why he thought it was popular during the 1930s and 40s.
I actually really like swing music. I think it's really smart music, but I think it's really fun. Swing music, apart from being fun, it takes a lot of musical understanding to create it. Well, I think swing music was probably popular in the 30s and 40s because it was a time that the world needed to have fun. I genuinely think the world needed to enjoy themselves, and swing music is nothing if not enjoyable.
From 1939 to 1942, the best-selling musical artist in the USA was Glenn Miller, dominating the charts with songs still famous today, such as Chattanooga Choo Choo and In the Mood. Before Kanye West, before Bob Dylan, before Elvis, there was Glenn Miller, a boy from Iowa who grew up to be an upstanding member of society and international superstar. Until the world was shocked on Christmas Eve, 1944.
Major Glenn Miller, the well-known American bandleader, is reported missing. He left England by air for Paris 9 days ago.
There has never been an official report on the disappearance of one of music's most beloved entertainers, but there certainly has been a lot of conjecture, and quite a few conspiracy theories, ranging from the ridiculous to the eerily possible. First, a short history of Alton Glenn Miller, the all-American boy who provided joy and comfort to millions worldwide. Miller's love of music began at an early age, and his first instrument was a mandolin, given to him by his father. Miller, however, was not fond of the mandolin, so he traded it for a trombone, the instrument that would afford him international fame and fortune. A natural talent, Glenn Miller played music every chance he got, beginning in a town band in Grant City, Missouri. After the family moved to Fort Morgan, Colorado in 1914, Miller began playing in his high school band and, in his senior year, playing for the football team. Miller proved to be an excellent footballer and was chosen by the Colorado High School Sports Association as the best left end in Colorado. While Miller loved football, his love for music usurped the sport, and so he started a dance band with some school friends. In 1921, Miller was set to graduate from high school, but rather than attend the graduation ceremony, he hopped a train to Laramie, Wyoming, and began his professional career in the Boyd Center Band. By 1935, Miller had gained a reputation for his talent, and after several tenures with popular swing bands led by the likes of Benny Goodman and Tommy Dorsey, he formed his own band. In 1939, Miller became a household name with his orchestra's first mega-hit single, Moonlight Serenade, which reached number 3 on the US Billboard charts. The success of this song and Miller's distinctive swing jazz style helped them become the top dance band in the USA from 1939 to 1942. And while the Second World War had been underway for several years, the USA was not involved until one fateful day, in 1941.
Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
In 1942, at the age of 38, in the peak of his civilian career, Miller was too old for the draft, but still wanted to assist the war effort by performing for the troops in order to raise morale. He first volunteered for the Navy, but was told they did not need his services.
You're an eager beaver, Miller, and you got moxie, kid. But there ain't nothing you can do for us, you hear? Take your trombone and scram.
Well, that isn't exactly what they said. This is.
You have not established to the satisfaction of the Navy Department that your particular qualifications fit you for a mobilization billet in the Naval Reserve.
While Miller was saddened, he was not discouraged and decided to enlist in the U.S. Army Air Force. On the 26th of September, Miller and his orchestra played their final show at the Central Theatre in Passaic, New Jersey. It was now time for Miller to leave civilian life behind him. But little did he know, it would be forever. On November 3rd, Glenn Miller was appointed the rank of captain in the Army of the United States, and his mission was to modernize the Army Air Force Band and leave the former marching band style music in his wake. In 1943, at the behest of General Dwight Eisenhower, Captain Glenn Miller and his radio production unit were transferred to England. December came around, and Miller and his orchestra were booked to play on Christmas Day for the Normandy invasion troops in a now liberated Paris. On the 12th of December, the Marquis of Queensbury threw a farewell party for Miller, who was scheduled to fly out on the 14th. However, on the 14th, all flights were grounded due to bad weather. Miller was nothing if not a dedicated performer, and was determined to get to Paris to prepare for his upcoming shows. A new friend of Miller's, Lieutenant Colonel Norman F. Basil, informed Miller that he had a spare seat aboard his plane, a UC-64 Norseman, which would be leaving for Paris the next day. It was this eagerness that sadly led to Glenn Miller's demise. Celebrities, be they uniformed or not, were required to have special approval for travel because of one other international celebrity, Major General Clark Gable. Gable had been caught stowing away on several B-17 missions over Europe in the guise of filming a documentary leading to the US Army putting restrictions on flights.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Lieutenant Colonel Basil, however, had the power to authorize his own flights, but no one in Miller's chain of command were aware that Miller was intending to depart the UK aboard Basil's plane. On Friday the 15th of December, Miller, Basil, and Field Officer John R.S. Morgan, an inexperienced pilot at only 20 years old, departed from RAF Twinwood Farm in Bedfordshire, off runway 23, at 1:55 p.m. The plane and its passengers were never seen again. Since this day, and still decades later, there has been a whirlwind of theories of what may have happened to Miller. The most prominent conspiracy theory is that Miller did arrive in Paris and rather than get straight to work, decided to indulge in a little fun by visiting a bordello. A little fun turned into a lot of excitement, and Miller died of a heart attack while in the company of a Parisian prostitute. This theory was begun by German journalist Udo Ufkotter in 1997. It was claimed that Ufkotter received documents under the Freedom of Information Act which stated that this fanciful story was indeed true, and the US military had covered this up to protect Miller's image and reputation. Later, however, Ufkotter retracted this, stating he was misquoted and that he never received any documents. He'd just been told this story by German intelligence specialists and didn't hold much weight in it himself. According to Miller expert and biographer Dennis Sprague, who spent years researching both Miller's life and death, this rumour was initially concocted by Nazi propaganda chief Hermann Göring and was announced only after the radio announcement of Miller's disappearance on the 24th of December.
Major Glenn Miller, the well-known American band leader, is reported missing.
When I spoke with Peter Bailey, I asked what he thought of this theory.
Look, I love a good conspiracy theory, but I'm actually not a believer in conspiracy theories because I don't know if you've ever tried to keep a secret, but if you tell one person, it's impossible.
The other widely believed theory of Miller's disappearance was put in motion by Fred Shaw, a navigator with the 149th Squadron based in Norfolk. According to his logbook, on the 15th of December, his squadron was sent to make a bombing run over Germany, but due to the bad weather affecting the area, the order was abandoned. Unable to land safely in Norfolk with a full load of bombs on their planes, they had to get rid of them in a special area of the English Channel, known as the Southern Jettisoning Area. All air and ship traffic were forbidden from this area, but after unloading their dangerous cargo, the bombardier of the squadron saw a plane flying south below them. It was noticed to be the very model of Norseman plane that Miller was upon. Navigator Shaw then saw the plane going into a tailspin before losing sight of it as it went below cloud cover. This theory was offered some credence by the Ministry of Defence, who in 1985 claimed it the most likely explanation. Simply, bad weather led to Miller's plane accidentally travelling through the jettisoning area, and concussion waves from the exploding bombs caused the pilot to lose control and crash into the water. However, at the time, Fred Shaw and his fellow squadron members did not report the downed plane. And it was only in the mid-1980s, while living in South Africa, that he supposedly remembered his experience and began to tell his story. Another factor is the time of Miller's departure and the time Fred Shaw's squadron jettisoned their bombs. There is a near 1 hour discrepancy between them, as well as an eyewitness plane spotting hobbyist who tracked the Norseman, showing a 15-mile difference of the South Jettison area and Miller's route. These discrepancies and the lack of an official report of the account has led investigators in recent years to think Shaw's account as false. What does Peter think?
If I'm ever going to believe in a conspiracy, it's that kind. And the thing that always makes me go, but it can't be true, is there's never been a deathbed confession. But maybe that kind of was a deathbed confession.
The most widely accepted explanation of the disappearance of the greatest trombonist of the 20th century is also the simplest. It states that the Norseman plane Miller was flying in was brought down by a combination of below freezing temperatures and a defective carburetor, which supplies fuel to the cylinders to power the propeller. The carburetors installed in all Norseman planes were recycled from previous planes, as the United States had prioritized new carburetors for combat aircraft and not utility aircraft. The carburetors were also explicitly known to have defective heating elements, and hence, the theory goes that the Norseman's engine froze, causing the single propeller to malfunction and cease operating. In January 1945, the US military also came to this conclusion, but never released the information to the public. This was due to their regulation in trying to protect families of soldiers lost at war. Miller's flight was a serious breach of protocol, and due to the military's conclusion that human error played a large role in the disappearance of the plane, Glenn Miller's family was never informed of what happened, just that it did happen. Peter's view on this theory is similar to most investigators.
I think it's incredibly likely. What is it, Occam's razor? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Occam's razor indeed.
Whatever the stories behind the disappearance of Glenn Miller may say, the facts remain. Miller was an icon for a generation and a beloved family man who was taken far too early. It's unlikely we will ever know the real truth behind the disappearance, but it's always fun to speculate. I'm Rufus Barr. Thanks for listening.